Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Cure Talks. I'm Priya Menon, your host. And today on Cure Talks, we are discussing managing mental health in cancer patients and their families during COVID-19 with Dr. Diane Shume from UCSF Helen Diller Family Comprehensive Cancer Center. Talking to Dr. Shume on the patient panel are patient advocates David Stanley, Jim Wickstrom, and Daniel Ripley-Burgess. So let's jump right into our discussion today. We have with us clinical psychologist Dr. Diane Shume, who is Director of Psycho-Oncology at UCSF Helen Diller Family Comprehensive Cancer Center. Dr. Shume, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Shume, cancer patients and survivors had a lot to deal with even before the COVID-19 pandemic began. Now, the stress of coping with a chronic condition and the threat of catching this infectious respiratory illness is creating additional anxiety for patients handling both. What are cancer patients dealing with now with the additional stress of COVID-19? And if you had to pick one new concern you're seeing in your patients related to COVID-19, what would it be?
Well, I'm observing that we're all under some considerable stress right now. I'm myself speaking from my home. All of us are spending a lot more time in our homes. And so we're all impacted by quite a lot of new kind of stress and uncertainty, health concerns that maybe we haven't faced as non-cancer survivors. But cancer survivors are experiencing some of the same stressors and then some additional stressors on top of that. But in some ways, cancer survivors are really experts at facing a few of these things. For example, the idea of staying home, isolating in order to take care of your health. The idea of, confronting health anxiety, perhaps. So a lot of these things are really actually familiar with our cancer survivors. But there is some particular increased stress, I think, at this time. All of the things that are impacting people around financial concerns and social isolating and uncertainty about the future, all of those are impacting our cancer survivors. But there are some additional ones, I think, that are particularly concerning, and that is a lot to do with, how is the cancer going to be treated now in this environment, knowing that the medical system is trying to respond to the surge of COVID-19 cases, and the doctors are working hard to keep everybody safe. And so there's a lot of confusion right now around medical decision-making and interacting with the healthcare team. Patients are asking, should I be going in for the routine visits that I would normally be doing? Is my surveillance going to be delayed? And that's causing some anxiety. Should I call my doctor about a symptom or a side effect that I'm having? Or are they, would I be distracting them, or are they too busy? What do I do when I show up for my in-person visit? What is the screening process going to be like? Or how do I navigate and move through the lobby and the waiting rooms in this new process? And will I be safe in the waiting room and other areas in the clinic? Some patients are asking who are newly diagnosed, will this delay my surgery? Will this delay my treatment? Will my the treatment decision-making be different at this time? And related a bit to this is concern about their advanced directives. So advanced directives are a document that tells your treatment team your wishes for care should you become unable to communicate. It designates a person to speak on your behalf, and it also gives general and specific guidance about what your wishes are. And I find that a number of my patients are scrambling right now to do their advanced directives. Perhaps they had it partially completed, or they hadn't really wanted to do it in the past. Now they're finding that they that they would really like to have this ready. Patients may know now what they would like should they be faced with an ICU stay. Other patients may not really fully understand maybe what they would like. But there are many supports in place right now to help folks get their advanced care directive ready. And finally, patients are very impacted and concerned about social isolation, especially when it comes to bringing family members and friends with them to medical appointments or having family or friends visiting them in the hospital. Because of the need to keep folks safe, these visits have been limited, and so patients are needing to navigate by themselves when normally they would have family or
friends. So I believe those fears sound like more than enough, but we're guessing that's not the end of it. Dr. Shuey, in fact, my next question was on this. Like, we have, patients who are in for transplants or for therapy sessions, as you're mentioning, and who have family members and caregivers, probably come from out of state to support. And, they try to stay near the hospitals. But then because of this COVID, all their plans changed, circumstances have changed. And under the circumstances, I believe an involved caregiver is so important for these patients. So what are you seeing? How are you seeing these patients reacting to these worries?
So this is putting, thank you for describing that, especially when it comes to a stem cell transplant type situation in which caregivers are really necessary and an extended stay in the hospital is very necessary. The difficulty for caregivers to be present has really shifted the planning and the support for patients. I have been doing telehealth video visits with patients who are in the hospital and finding that they are having to navigate the inpatient stay by doing video chatting with their friends and family. And so they're not having any in-person visits at this time. But the staff is doing quite a bit to facilitate as much of that video visit as possible. Another thing that's happening is that some family members are granted some limited permission to visit, as well as family members are sending pictures and notes that are being printed out by the medical staff to hang in the room, streaming services of meditations and support groups are happening in the patient rooms.
Mm-hmm. So that's the condition of isolation at the hospital, having to cope with something, something as difficult as a transplant and be alone at the hospital. So thanks that, you're letting us know that the support that they get from the medical facility, people around, the nurses and the helpers, are really great. But do you think, like as we were talking about, I believe, Dr. Shume, that the normal problems, that they come across, like in case, whether the hospitals have any capacity to take care of them in case they fall ill, whether, if they would have complications, probably like an infection or sepsis, as you said, problems that may require an ICU bed, would the space be available, et cetera, common things that haunt cancer survivors at this point. So during these heightened anxiety levels, I'm sure they need help. So do you think they should skip their psychotherapy treatments because to avoid exposure to COVID-19 at medical centers?
So there's no need for patients to skip their psychotherapy visits, because I'm happy to say that as a field, psychologists and therapists across the country and world, I'm imagining, have shifted our care to video visits. So at UCSF, our psychology team at the Cancer Center, within a few days, was able to convert our patient visits to video. And we're able to provide very effective psychotherapy and support to patients via the video interface. For those patients who don't have a video or an internet signal, we're able to do the same work via telephone. So it's very important to us to continue to provide, and in fact, our services are needed all the more, just as you pointed out, Priya. We are as busy as ever helping cancer patients through these remote aspects. And we also have a number of supportive care. So later in the show, if we have time, I'd love to share some of the other supportive care programming that is happening via streaming and Zoom groups and multiple other ways for folks to get that kind of support that everybody so desperately needs right now.
Dr. Shume, are the mental health needs of patients with other chronic conditions, probably like heart disease or hypertension and diabetes, similar to those of cancer patients?
They're both similar and different. If you're talking about in the COVID-19 respect, to some extent, that vulnerability that our cancer patients are experiencing, our cardiovascular and diabetes patients are also experiencing that sense of vulnerability, that idea that that they have the categories of illnesses that the CDC has said are more vulnerable to potentially having a worse outcome with the COVID. And so folks are addressing those same concerns across all different kinds of medical conditions. And so in that respect, I think, you know, cancer patients are not unique in the sense of having an elevated sense of health anxiety. But at the same time, all patients with chronic illnesses have developed, you know, some skills in how to deal with what's happening as a novel experience for people who haven't had to face their health concerns.
It really sounds like we all could use some mental health care right now. Dr. Shume, one last question before I hand over and open it up to the patient panel. What advice do you have for cancer patients who are feeling anxious or worried in the current health crisis?
So the first thing that I always want to say is that is to realize that worry is normal. One of the things that we don't want to do is pour more gasoline on the fire of anxiety by being afraid of anxiety. And so to kind of say, hey, this is a unique time. There are a lot of feelings floating about right now. And to understand that those feelings are normal, and to kind of accept the ups and downs of worry and anxiety as part of being human, really part of being mammals and humans. And in that acceptance of the fact that worry is normal, is a practice of self-compassion. So understanding that we are doing the best we can in this moment. It's incredibly difficult. And we want to kind of keep ourselves doing the best we can by encouraging ourselves, but also not really kind of beating ourselves up when we maybe aren't doing everything that we think we should be doing. And so self-compassion is an incredibly important thing. And compassion towards others is a really, really important thing to be doing right now. Sometimes when we worry a lot and we get kind of into a silo of fear, sometimes one of the best things we can do is kind of take a deep breath and say, is there something good that I can do for someone else today? It kind of brings us out of that sort of vortex and out into a sense of doing something helpful and meaningful. And then I just want to say that curiosity is your friend. It's interesting. How am I responding in this moment? What is this interesting period of COVID-19? How are other people responding? It's the curiosity can keep us amused, but at the same time a little bit detached from a lot of the overwhelming feelings. And when I say curiosity, I'm not recommending that you dive down that rabbit hole of news 24/7. We know that kind of imbibing too much news can really contribute to our sense of worry and anxiety. And so I really recommend limiting the news. And what I suggest is limiting ourselves to news that is actionable. In other words, news that helps us make a good decision that would be helpful for us. Limiting all the other news unless it's good news. And so I'm going to put in a plug for John Krasinski's Some Good News Network. But really kind of thinking, are there some bright spots that I can pay attention to? And then otherwise the news that can help me make good decisions. And then in that same philosophy, I like to harvest diamonds from experiences. In other words, even the most difficult experiences, and they are difficult. A lot of grief is floating about right now. A lot of terror and fear is floating about right now. A lot of boredom and just kind of irritability is floating about. But even in the midst of those experiences, as we kind of, sit there twiddling our thumbs, looking out the window, we can kind of see a bird alight on a tree and say, wow, that was a diamond that just kind of came into my view. And so harvesting diamonds and beauty can really go a long way. And then, really leaning on the social support that is available. I know that a lot of us are very kind of lonely, and some folks who live alone don't have anyone in their home, but there are so many things available: online support groups, calling a friend, really lean on other people. Even writing old-fashioned letters would be lovely to do right now. And practice mindfulness. Even if you've never tried it before, try some of these mindfulness strategies. There are a number of mindfulness apps and free online guided mindfulness programs. But really kind of taking a minute to learn how to stay present and get us some distance from those worrying thoughts. Yeah, a couple other things I just wanted to wrap up with. Just to remember to do all the basic care for yourself. Sleeping on a schedule, eating, drinking water, going out for a walk if you can, or getting exercise. All of these things are the basics that we need to do to be our best selves.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Shumay. With that, I'm going to hand over to David Stanley to start with the patient panel discussion. David is a Michigan-based writer, teacher, a voiceover actor, and audiobook narrator. His book, Melanoma, It Started with a Freckle, outlines his journey with the condition. David writes prolifically on cancer care and living. Over to you, David.
Priya, how are you? Nice to hear your voice again. Dr. Shumay, actually I've already touched on a couple of the things that I wanted to ask you about, but one thing I didn't hear you say bring up was the idea of journaling as a part of this practice, some things like some compassion, like a compassion wall. Some of the hands-on kind of practical nuts and bolts sorts of things that a lot of us talk about. If you could go into those ideas a little bit more, I'd like to hear what you have to say. Thanks.
Wow, that's a great topic. Thank you so much. I think that the journaling can be a really helpful way to take what's happening inside us that can feel really overwhelming, and when it's just like in our mind and kind of floating about, and we can take it and put it down on paper, and that kind of gives us a little bit of a distance from it. And so there are all kinds of really wonderful strategies to do that. Our Art for Recovery program at UCSF is launching a wild writing course where folks are given a prompt, and you can do this at home. Kind of give yourself like a prompt, like how am I feeling today, or what matters to me, or and there's any number of prompts. And then you sit down and for about 10 minutes, you just write without censoring, without having to have any grammatical perfection. This isn't going to be turned into your high school English teacher. You know, it's really about sort of getting it out of you and onto paper. And you may read it after that, and you may not. I mean, it may just be the process of kind of getting the, you know, having that flow. Other kinds of techniques are great. For example, a gratitude journal is really lovely. So if you have gone through the day and you've been harvesting some of the diamonds from the experiences, you know, you see a rainbow in a window, or you watch a YouTube video of some healthcare providers having some applause, you can actually, you know, keep track of those moments in this gratitude journal, so that over a period of a week, you can look back and see how many wonderful things are happening in this world, even as so many difficult things are happening. And one suggestion that I have been giving myself and others is to write yourself a letter from the future. So you know, now we're like a year from now, and we're looking back on what we did during COVID-19 of spring 2020. And in that letter, we're describing all the wonderful attributes that we were able to display and the values that we were able to try to live and the compassion and self-compassion that we showed. And so that we're writing back during, you know, May or April of 2020, I was blah, 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 blah. And you write this letter from your future, and then you look at the letter and you say, how can I live that more fully right now?
Okay. I like those ideas. I want to ask you, I'm a high school science teacher, and I'm teaching from home, obviously, and we're starting off every lesson with a little bit of science, because I'm teaching chemistry and biology, with a little bit of a lesson about virology and epidemiology, because it's in the kids' minds. These are all high school kids. And last night, I woke up shouting in the middle of my dream. My wife had to wake me up, actually, because I was, in some bizarre way, I was like training some kids in like Army Ranger training, and this fake, what's a good way to put it, like a Terminator or some sort of unseen terror that was supposed to be fake came to life, and I had to defend my kids against all of this, and I was shouting, and I'm doing a little reading this morning. And it turns out that many of us are having a lot of really weird dreams these days. I checked out a couple of the groups, like the Facebook groups that I'm in, and I'm far from the only one that's having these bizarre dreams. Do you have anything to say about that, in general terms, about, because cancer patients, we all have weird dreams anyway, because we spend a lot of our life, you know, terrified. But can you speak to that, those dreaming sorts of issues that I think a lot of people besides me are having right now?
Oh, that's really fascinating. And I love that you are a superhero in your dream. That, like,
right?
I love that you, I love that you consider that responsibility towards the kids, and that you take that on in such a heroic way. And, you know, this notion of superhero, it can be really helpful right now, because a lot of us feel like imposters even when we're at our most superhero best. And so that's one theme that I love that you're bringing up. I think we're activated generally more than, you know, it's an interesting thing physiologically, because we kind of jump between sort of very bored and very, quiet when we're kind of in our isolated at home, to sort of, you know, sheer terror on the other side. So it's almost like we're bouncing between the two. But I think that a lot of the, you know, especially sort of the anxiety dreams that are coming up have to do with probably a higher basal anxiety level during the day. And again, I would not read so much into it as much as saying, hey, this is where we are. We're as a world, and as people, we are in this very uncertain place. and kind of, you know, hold ourselves tenderly in that place where we are. And, you know, one of the things that I like about the dream research is that it shows something that I really love about human nature, and that is that that dreams are a way that our brains can sort of resolve a lot of what has been happening emotionally in our days. The content of it isn't as important as sort of the emotional content of it, and that our brains are able to kind of process and work through a lot of that emotion while we're sleeping.
Very interesting. Thank you. I think I'll step aside. We have a couple other panelists that have some questions. Appreciate it. I'll be listening for the rest of the show. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David. Next, we have Daniel Ripley-Burgess. Daniel is a two-time colon cancer survivor, first diagnosed at the age of 17. She's an award-winning communications professional and the author of Blush, How I Barely Survived 17. She writes and speaks to encourage others that faith can survive. Danielle, you're on. Please ask your questions.
Hi, good afternoon.
So good afternoon, Danielle.
I think some of my first question has been addressed, but I think a lot, like you said, a lot of us who have chronic disease, this feels oddly familiar. Like you said, like kind of coping with anxiety and staying at home. And I think for a lot of us, it's triggering, you know, some memories and difficult emotions. And so just strategies, any more strategies on how to cope, and then also how to know when is it time to call for help if it's triggering a lot of memories from the past.
Oh, that's really, really good questions. I'm realizing that the panel, those of you on the panel today, are much better experts than I am on the cancer experience. And I just want to say that I really rely, especially on my longtime cancer survivors, people who've been dealing with cancer for years, to really help me formulate a lot of my thinking and program development on these topics, because you really know what you're doing. And I think that's the message. One of the messages that I want to really emphasize is that this is really familiar to all of you. And you do know how to do this. Like you know how to cope. And going back to some of the strategies that have worked in the past, and bringing in some new strategies, like really kind of figuring out how to have some psychological flexibility and willingness to try some different things, and also to drop some of the rigidity that we often have about doing the things that are good for us, if you follow my gist. What you mentioned, Danielle, is something that a number of my patients have mentioned, and that is that during their previous experience with staying home and isolating, they were very sick, or they were just in the throes of kind of a new diagnosis or some very difficult treatments. And so during that time, there was a lot of kind of fear, some trauma even going on, and you know, maybe even some clinical depression type symptoms. And so to be kind of smack back in that same familiar kind of routine where, you know, not much physical activity, not much interaction with people, staring at the four walls of potentially the same bedroom that that they were in when they were convalescing, all of those cues can trigger sort of a conditioned memory of kind of a feeling of depression. So one of my patients was talking about saying that like the depression and isolation were so reminiscent of recovery from a stem cell transplant that she was like feeling herself kind of, you know, sinking down into a depression right now. you know, it's in, and there's also the potential of some of, you know, some of our patients have experienced traumatizing and very anxiety producing kind of experiences in the process of cancer. And so a lot of those memories can come flooding back right now. I would answer, Danielle, that like my first answer to your question about when should you call is to say, you know, I think that cancer psychologists and other support folks and programs can be helpful for everybody with cancer at any point. I mean, it's really about thriving and kind of, you know, being the best you possibly can be, and also as a kind of a preventative to continue to have like the best coping strategies and the most resilience no matter what's coming your way. But I think that if you do find yourself kind of depleting your usual coping strategies, that you're finding that you're either not able to access the things that you need to do well, or you're finding yourself resistant to engaging in the things that you know to do well, or you're finding that you're getting sort of more symptoms of anxiety and depression, and I would say that you would definitely benefit from reaching out to somebody who's experience with working with especially cancer patients, and I would encourage you to reach out. There are a number of resources that we can point you to in order to find some support.
Awesome. Thank you. That's so helpful. Yeah, I've felt that, and I've heard it from the survivor community, just what you're saying, and tying what was to what is now, and so that was really helpful. The second question I had is, I know mindfulness and meditation and prayer can be really helpful during times like this, but sometimes it's really hard to calm the mind with just so many thoughts and distractions, whether mentally, or I know I've got a 9-year-old here, so whether we're at home or even like with others, it's hard to be still. So any tips or strategies to try and get to that place?
So really, really good question, Danielle. I'm so glad you asked that, because I think that sometimes when people say do mindfulness, the implication is you should be able to just like quickly get into like a calm mind state. And if you can't, you know, something's wrong, you're not able to do it or something. I would say that if you were to watch your mind and observe it as an observer, you might notice that there are times during the day and times during your life when your mind is busier and generating a lot more thoughts at a much more rapid pace than at other times. And you know, sometimes that can increase your anxiety, and your anxiety can increase the busyness of your mind. You probably have noticed that. So what I would say is, one, welcome the fact that your mind generates thoughts at a rapid pace sometimes. Kind of get, you know, get some comfort around the fact that this is a normal job of the mind. The brain is an organ that generates thoughts, and it generates all kinds of thoughts. Some of them are nonsense, and some of them are helpful, and some of them are neutral, and some of them, you know, warn us and scare us. I mean, there's just so many thoughts that our brain generates just as part of its job as an organ. We know that we can, we know that when we're more kind of anxious, more riled up, we're going to have more rapid thoughts, and our brain is going to be less likely to kind of calm down. We know that if we're drinking caffeine, we're going to have more of that. And so kind of paying attention to some of those basics in terms of, you know, maybe I'm sort of running on extra stress right now. Is there some way that I can kind of give myself some calming? You know, one way would be to reduce some of the stimulation. I know that might not be possible or isn't possible when you have a 9-year-old or other kids running around.
Another thing to do is to exercise, is to move your body, because I think many of us are not getting as much movement as normal. And so get out there with the kids and, like, do a dance party. You know, just kind of work off some of that extra energy. And then lastly, a really great breathing practice can really bring our overall arousal level down to kind of a calmer level. And that breathing practice is super simple. It's really just breathing deeply and exhaling twice as long as our inhalation. So we're just kind of breathing in, and then we're doing a very slow exhalation. And even if you do that once, or you do that 100 times, you know, in a row, it's always very helpful to kind of bring that overall physiological anxiety arousal down. I hope that helps.
Yeah, that's super helpful. It's not, and it's super practical. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck with the kids.
Thank you. Okay, my final question is about boundaries, like healthy boundaries. So I know as a patient, I'm wanting to help others through this, you know, especially as, I can relate to how you're feeling, whether you've had cancer or not, but also practice the self-care. So when it comes to, you know, setting a good boundary for self, I don't know, you have any ideas for that?
That's lovely. I'm glad that you brought this up, because I know that there are many of us in the helping world who with the helping personality who kind of overdo. A lot of people have been making the analogy of the put on your oxygen mask before your own, before you put on someone else's, take it. And a lot of these things are great advice, but it's hard to figure out how to implement them in the moment. We feel the need. We see the need. We want to fulfill our part in it. We feel guilty when we don't. Like, how do we manage that? And then maybe later we realize we're depleted, or we're exhausted, or we're at the point of, you know, irritability, and we're snapping at everybody, which doesn't turn out to be a kind thing, I guess. So what I would say is, you can take some advice from David and get a nice journal and write on one page all of the reasons why you want to help others, all of the values that you're living when you help others. You want to be a kind person. You want to be a generous person. You want to contribute to the world. You want to be a supportive family member, whatever those are. Write that on one side of the notebook. On the other side, write all the reasons you want to support yourself, that you believe that good health is important, that you think that you are deserving of your own self-care, whatever that is. It has to be, your own words, not mine. And then as you look down at these two columns or these two pages, one where you want to support others and that's all true and good and you want to be about those things, and one where you want to support yourself, which is all true and good and you want to be about that, then with that kind of a bit of a distance, start to make some decisions about how you can go ahead and help others while helping yourself, or how you can prioritize yourself a little bit. And look back at this notebook when you're feeling confused about it, or when you need to make a decision in the moment. And this will help you remember that it is important to you to take care of yourself, and for good reasons.
Wow, that's a great idea. I love that. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks. I now pass it to the next person.
Thank you, Daniel. Our next panel member is Jim Wickstrom. Jim is a cancer survivor and advocate, helping newly diagnosed prostate cancer patients understand proprietary treatment solutions. Jim, you're on.
Well, thank you. Boy, it's really a coincidence some of the comments made here, because I've done journaling with students before, and writing things down is such a powerful way to resolve and release some of the emotions we have. And coincidentally, I've taught a dream unit before with sixth graders. And we had the kids write down what they what their dreams were about as part of a unit. I was working with a therapist at the time who taught with me. And it was so wonderful for the kids to be able to resolve things by writing them down or just cryptic notes. So that's kind of on a side note. I have some levity to bring in here. I'm not sure. Here we are in 2020, Zooming everywhere. And I'm going to give you some interesting trivia you may find that's going to be on Jeopardy in a decade from now, because 35 years ago, Aretha Franklin foreshadowed what we're seeing right now in 1985 with her song, Who's Zooming Who? So I'm just throwing that out there. This has been foreshadowed already. It's probably going to be in a Jeopardy question any time now. My first question is, you know, I'm a political animal. We're looking at the large picture here. We don't even know the breadth or the extent of the coronavirus outbreak because, as Dr. Birx has shared, she's only getting 50% of the data that's true because of underreporting for a variety of reasons. So this will probably go into 2022 in some form or another till we can actually have a vaccine, you know, created, tested, and immunizing all Americans. So my question is, the emotional interventions you're mentioning are wonderful. We're all trying to be in contact at risk apart, but people need to touch. And down the road, is there a time you think when people will be able to touch other friends of theirs who they desperately need to?
Wow. Jim, thank you. That is, you have just hit on something that is a very significant point of grief for me, and I know for many, many, many of us, is missing that touch and wondering when we'll be able to touch those we love, when we'll be able to hug, when we'll be able to kiss, when we'll be able to provide that kind of support and comfort in a physical way that Danielle was talking about. This is just incredible. And, you know, just to kind of, you know, feel that feeling of the grief that is part of this. Of course, I don't have an answer as to when that can happen. As a psychologist, I'm not an epidemiologist, but I can tell you that that this is an incredibly important part of our experience as mammals, not just as humans, but this need to just kind of be with each other. We evolved incredibly as social beings, and I'm finding that we are learning to connect even in this short time that we've been forced to do so by Zoom and by phone. I think we're evolving even now to start to approximate some tiny piece of connection that we would normally have, but I don't think this will ever really substitute. And, you know, one of the things that I've been thinking about is I was reading an article in the New York Times about kind of what might be going forward for us as you know, we wait for a vaccine and things are uncertain, is this idea of the hammer and the dance. In other words, staying, sort of incredibly socially isolated and shelter in place and quarantined versus kind of moving out into the world where some populations or some people are able to move about, others stay quarantined, and kind of moving this in waves over time. I think that scenario is going to be incredibly difficult for our cancer survivors and patients. I think that right now, where most of us across the country are kind of hunkering down and sheltering in place, as things open up and certain people feel comfortable or are given permission to kind of move about, our cancer survivors and patients may not feel as safe or may still be advised to continue to quarantine. And so I'm anticipating that the emotional and mental health fallout from that for our cancer survivors is going to be immense.
Boy, that's the understatement too. You know, in your presentations, Dr. Shumay, you've shared like a powerful message of hope, of emotional resolution during these times. How are psycho-oncologists getting the message of mindfulness, of self-compassion, of psychological flexibility out to all Americans? Because we seem to be living in a little of our own box that we don't step out of, where we have some people haven't gone out in 5 weeks out of their house, literally. And you have other people who are protesting. How are you linking to other media or national publications to get out the messages that are so valid that you are sharing?
So more powerful people than myself, and I feel very powerful today on this forum. I think that we're reaching lots of people, and I'm really looking forward to kind of helping in any way that I can through this forum. And I would encourage others who are listening to also do what you can to help spread this kind of really good and important information. But I, at UCSF, one of my colleagues, a psychologist by the name of Dr. Alyssa Epple, has compiled a fantastic collection of resources, and they're available to anybody. She's also been doing interviews such as on NPR and elsewhere. And she has compiled with her team a number of resources to support your mental health during COVID-19. And this is for folks across the board, so cancer patients as well as patients of any kind, regular folks without without cancer, as well as frontline responders and others, family members. And it can be found on the UCSF Psychiatry website, and I can share that with listeners if you'd like. This collection of resources is just fantastic. She has reached out to virtually every expert in the field, from master psychologists who are doing video demonstrations of psychological first aid techniques, to masters in different contemplative spiritual practice. I think that this is one of the experiences that we've been having over and over again with our work from home phenomenon, where we lose each other temporarily. So I was talking about Dr. Alyssa Epple's website, where she has collected resources from master psychologists and others from across the world into one location. And I also just want to say that many, many, many cancer-related programs have gone online. And I want to do a shout-out to our Art for Recovery program at UCSF, which is delivers art experiences via Zoom and YouTube streaming and Facebook, and organizations across the country are doing the same.
Wonderful. For me, I really enjoyed today's presentation. What sticks in my craw right now are places like Georgia and Arkansas and Florida potentially opening up more risk to all of us. And I see the people I talk with who are men dealing with prostate cancer, they do not know how to resolve themselves or ask for help like women dealing with breast cancer, for example. So in these other states, there's way too much bravado going on against a pandemic. And I'm just hoping that, like my question was, we can get the message out to those states that are going to be at risk for whatever, either nursing homes, to regular people who are going to the beach, who are going to a bowling alley, for example, and not realizing the not just physical risk, but emotional risk to their family, too. So I'm just hoping the word gets out on forums that people listen to that are not just people who would look for a psychologist or look for something intellectual. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. The public health message is an incredibly difficult type of message to get across because it requires people confront something very uncomfortable, which is fear and vulnerability. And so folks are really hesitant to be at the mercy of those difficult.
Yes, please continue, Dr. Shumi.
So I was just talking about the difficult emotions of fear and vulnerability and how oftentimes this kind of resistance and bravado is an instinctual response to kind of push back against some feelings that are so difficult to confront. And sometimes it makes for a very difficult public health message and intervention to try to help people to understand what the information is when it's very difficult to hear for them.
Thank you so much.
Jim. Thank you very much for those questions. Dr. Shumi, we'll just open it up for some audience questions now. I'll read those questions out and you can probably give quick answers. First one is, psychosomatic issues are we seeing in cancer patients and survivors in the current pandemic situation?
So by psychosomatic, we usually mean physical symptoms that may have a relationship to emotional symptoms, to emotional experiences. So it isn't necessarily that the physical symptom isn't real, it's that it can be worsened or brought on in the presence of more emotional symptoms. So one thing that I'm seeing is that, which is really common for cancer survivors, is this kind of vigilance to symptoms. So thinking, wait, do I have a sore throat? Do I have a headache? Is this cough related to COVID? Just an increase in kind of paying attention to physical symptoms, which may or may not be serious.
Okay. The next question, Dr. Shumi, is I know we've been talking about coping mechanisms for cancer survivors. So the question is, what can family members, friends, and caregivers do to help ease cancer patients' anxiety and depression during the COVID-19 crisis?
Well, there's a lot that you know, supportive folks, family members and friends can do for all of us. You know, we really, like I said earlier, you know, we really rely on each other to get through everything that's hard. It's really about like our support of each other that really helps bring us through. What I would caution, I know that this is happening where family members are getting quite upset with cancer patients or their older family members who they feel aren't taking good care to stay home, stay out of grocery stores, that sort of thing. So what I would say is that, you know, on both sides, that's coming from a loving place. So the family members really are caring about their more vulnerable family members, but I would just say take a lighter touch with that. Don't scold. Don't do something like a fear mongering where you're telling them that something really bad is going to happen to them. One family of a cancer patient was, you know, all got on the phone with her and told her that they thought she was going to die if she gets infected with COVID, and that caused her to be very scared and she was crying. So to take a lighter hand and not do too much scolding, but step up and help, bring food, bring encouragement, call and give loving words of support.
Thank you, Dr. Shumay. Next question is, how should we talk with our oncologists to learn what steps we will need to take specifically if we...
So I didn't hear the last part of that. Specifically,
they're asking if we go to the clinic, like if we have to go to the clinic, should we talk to oncologists to learn what steps needs to be taken?
So I think that at least our cancer center at UCSF, and I'm assuming cancer centers across the country, have a series of steps and policies and procedures in place at this point around kind of what patients need to be told, what they need to do. So I would encourage patients, if you have a question, to go ahead and call your provider. It's important that you don't kind of sit there and wonder, that you don't kind of catastrophize without getting information. If you have a specific question, to go ahead and call and ask, and you will likely be told some, you know, information that can help you make the best decisions.
Last question. Who is particularly vulnerable and what can I do to support them?
So if we're talking about vulnerability from a psychological point of view, I would emphasize that anybody who is very, very socially isolated is going to have a much harder time. So people who don't have family or friends at all are particularly vulnerable. People who don't have family or friends nearby. And of course, we know that people who have sort of, who fall into categories of kind of less resourced are having a much more difficult time through this. So we know people who, don't have financial resources, people who have to continue working even while they know that they're potentially exposing themselves to getting sick, people who are from different marginalized demographics, people who don't have resources or who don't have the same access to video chat or internet information, your neighbors who, you know, can't get their own groceries, reaching out to the people in our communities and in our networks who have more need. I think this is a way that we can really give to each other at this time. And when we write that letter to ourselves from the future, we're going to say we did the right thing and we did what we could to help each other.
Thank you, Dr. Shumay. I think that has been a great hour of discussing psychosocial support for cancer patients and families during this time of COVID-19. Dr. Shumay, it was a pleasure to have you with us, and thank you for your time and all the information that you've shared with us today.
It's been my pleasure indeed.
Appreciate your participation and those great questions. Thank you. As the world grapples with COVID-19, the population worldwide is escalating into negative psychological reactions like stress, adjustment disorders, and depression. Feeling under pressure is quite normal in the current situation. We've heard Dr. Shumay give us coping mechanisms like you harvest your diamonds, reach out for social support, practice mindfulness, and the best of all, write a letter to yourself from the future. So stay informed, stay safe, and reach out for help as required. We thank UCSF Helen Diller Family Comprehensive Cancer Center and the audience. This talk will be available on curetalks.com. Please visit our website for details on all upcoming talks. Everybody stay safe, and thank you very much.